serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation today with John Cardinale of Hollister, California, one of the last living links to the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, predecessor to the CIA. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find some short videos of this 96-year-old showing us some of the unique items he brought home from World War II. The Dutch map with his custom legend indicating positions of the 9 secret agents he supervised, the medical kit he carried, what's still in there and what he had to dispose of for safety reasons, and even the OSS stiletto, a lethal dagger adapted for these secret agents by legendary commando William Fairbairn, and given to John by Fairbairn himself after that famous instructor had cut Cardinale's hand with that very same dagger in training. We heard Mr. Cardinale share how he could recognize the Morse code signature of each one of the agents working under him, and how that helped him realize that an agent had been captured, and that's what happened in December 1944. In his book, 65 Years of Secrecy, he admits to wondering whether that agent's capture prevented the Allies from picking up advance warning of the Germans' last-ditch offensive that would trigger the Battle of the Bulge. He was in Belgium at the time with other OSS personnel.
The Germans being one last charge, they went all out, and it was wintertime. We're together, all boys got together. And once they started coming in, the Germans came from all over, new tank, King Tank, much bigger and stronger than ours. And we had to disperse. We each had radios and whatever we took. One guy went south, northeast. Anyway, but we were in contact. After a few days, I guess the weather broke loose and sunshine, and the Americans started attacking with their planes. The Germans kind of dispersed and whatever, and we got together again and went on our business as agents. From then on, we started moving here and there.
As you said earlier, all these agents that you worked with, you never knew their real names, you just had code names. Tell me about this guy whose code name was the Dutchman and some of the ways that you two communicated.
The Dutchman, he was underground. He had a bunch of civilians, saboteurs and all. I think they had about 150, 175 men. And he was getting more and more every day from the public. And he radioed OSS, and we got it from headquarters of OSS. I guess they were in Paris, and they did relay the message to them. He wanted, I believe, 200 weapons, guns, machine guns, not single weapons, machine guns, automatic rifles with the bullet clips loaded and all that. And he needed Long John Dunder, it was winter, cold. He wanted the rations, medication, and what all. He wanted some cigarettes. And he stressed, I think, I don't know, Lucky Strike, I believe it was. He wanted, they needed smokes. Anyway, so we couldn't airdrop these to him because we didn't know if that was an authentic message that we had gotten. And it happened that I had to go. We needed a couple agents and myself into we'll cross the Rhine River again, another part of the area, behind enemy lines. They had two men there on a mission, but we got together through natural radio with this Dutchman, and he's also told me that he needed weapons and all that. I said, well, I happened to be coming across the Rhine River. He would like to meet me by the windmills there. He said, okay, we'll meet you in the other end. So I told him he was leaving 1-2 o'clock in the morning where it's dark. Anyway, me and two agents went across the Rhine River, and we had a flashlight with the head of it taped so you see a spot. And he had one also. So anyway, he was singing from one shore to the other, halfway across the Rhine River. We went to the light, landed there right on the beach, and he come out, him and his lieutenant. There were civilian clothes, nice and underground. They pulled the boat up. We hid in the windmill, and we stood the boat up in, as if nobody's used it, see? And we kind of dried it out through hay there and oars underneath the hay on the floor. First, he asked me, where's my equipment? I said, well, I heard about it, but the headquarters said they weren't sure if it was an authentic message or Germany trying to get some weapons. And he says, I asked for this. I thought he was going to kill me. He was so damn mad. I don't blame the guy. And anyway, I got acquainted with him. I'll tell him, I'm going to radio back headquarters and tell him to start dropping, that this man needs the equipment right away. His army's getting large enough, from 150 to 175. About 200 people. Now he needed weapons. And then about a week later or so, they made a drop. He got everything. He thanked me, John. Thank you very much. No, Abner. Thank you very much. And I told him where we were going. So he says, we'll go as far as we can. We'll let your men off, and you come back with him. While going to our destination, that one guy in the army there in the underground, he always asked my men questions. Where are you headed for? What's your destination? This and that. And he wanted information. My agent said, I don't know where we're going. You have to ask our or leader. So anyway, he asked me, as a friendly underground operator, I says, I haven't got my orders yet. I have to wait till I get there. What's your mission? I don't know. Just going to go on, and on. And a bunch of questions. As this guy was there in Dutch underground, they're having a problem with dynamite bridges, this and that. Their explosive went haywire, see? A lot of snafu. You understand snafu? And anyway, so I mentioned the Dutchman. I said, you know, I had a guy talk to my men, where they're going, what the mission was, their name. And he would talk to me, what was my mission and all that. And we got together one evening talking, the Dutchman and I. And the Dutchman caught on. He actually put two and two together. This guy must be the guy who's causing all our problems with our explosive. Anyway, next morning, I get up. Well, not slipping the floor underground there. And says, where's so-and-so? They killed him. The leader cut his throat. Anyway, after that, everything went smooth. He was a German. He's a spy or whatever, sympathizer or whatever. I solved the case for him, in other words, because I told him that he was asking my men question, me question. So the leader put two and two together and figured it was him.
And good thing you didn't tell him too much, or it might have cost some of your lives.
Right. Uh-huh. So anyway, it worked out okay. From then on, everything went smoothly for the Dutch general. He got his equipment. He got rid of the informer. We reached the destination. I let my two men go. Well, they're behind Berlin. They went their way, and I went back to the river. So the lieutenant and I went back and helped me with the boat. You know, that's it. I went back to the Rhine River.
And on the back cover of your book is a photo of the Rhine River with windmill after windmill lined up on one end of the shore. And those windmills actually were telling a story that most of us would have no clue what that story was. What was the little code you learned about the windmills and the shape they were in?
The Rhine River had quite a few windmills because the farming depended on them, irrigation, whatever. And wherever you saw a windmill with a broken blade or missing blade, it was called safe home. For anybody that knew it, about that markings of the on the windmill, and notches after you, whoever's after you, run, look for a windmill with a broken blade, get in there and get inside, and you know the sliding door, and just hide behind that false wall, and you're safe there. And the German would probably look around us, and nobody kept on going. But there was quite a few little windmills, broken blades. So it went down. You may see one, and you maybe go down four or five windmills, find another broken blade.
Did you ever have to do that? Did you ever have to go hide in a windmill and go behind those false walls?
Yeah, I slipped in. I would say maybe three or four of them until we reached our destination. Our destination's quite a long, uh-huh, long ways off, yeah.
And just some general questions for you. The whole time you're doing this, did it ever occur to you how dangerous it was that you could lose your life over there?
Well, it occurred many times. But, you know, you're 22 years old, only want action and all that crap, you know. Today, I hear a pin drop and jump like a rabbit. But those days, nothing bothered me. I was scared, don't get me wrong. I was scared to sit, but still, I went through it, thank God.
And what do you think they would have told your wife? I mean, you had a wife and an infant son back home. Had you been killed over there, what would she have found out?
I guess the government, OSS probably brought in a telegram later on, you know. It kept quiet for a long time, so I can't say when and how they would notify my family if I would have to get killed somewhere. Probably killed in action, maybe. I don't know. I'm just assuming that. Didn't tell me I was OSS, so the war was still going on. Yeah. Well, another day, when I was in Germany there, way behind the enemy lines, I get a call from headquarters. But the war in Europe was ending now. Japanese war was still going on. And I said, Cardinal, report to Washington, D.C. The next transportation out of London or somewhere, come back to Washington, D.C. I was telling myself, what the hell? The war is still going. Be over about a couple of weeks in Europe. So I told my men, radio all of them, agents here and there, whatever, that stand fast until you get another message. I have to go back to Washington, D.C. I went back to Washington, D.C. I couldn't figure out what the hell they want, you know. Anyway, they said, Cardinal, he says, prepare yourself. You're going to CBI at China, Burma, India. I said, hell no, I don't want to go to CBI. I said, I volunteered also. I'm going to volunteer out. Now, hold on, don't get mad and all that. I'm talking to my officer now. So anyway, okay, hold on. Take a 45-day leave furlough. That's a long time, 45 days. So I went back to Monterey, 45 days, and my family didn't know why I came 45-day leave, and the war was still going on. I said I was tired, and they gave me a 45-day leave furlough. 45 days come by, I get a call saying, stay another 7 days. Then they call me back, John, but now the war ended. He says, come back, we got a job for you. So we're going to put you in charge of war crimes trial, files and documents, a room full of files and documents, atrocities, the German general so-and-so, colonel so-and-so. He said, whenever they had the trial, they wrap up and mail it to Nuremberg trial. I was going to take that job, but the war ended. I said, I want to go home, so I went home.
I mean, when you're home for that long and the war in Europe's just ended, it's still going in the Pacific, I'm sure your family had a lot of questions for you about what you'd been doing, right?
Yeah, they had questions, and I forgot what I told my guys. I'm in the Army, this and that, so nothing more was said about it. You know? They asked me how many guys I killed or what they do, this and that. I told nobody. I didn't even shout at my rifle. And they took it for granted, I guess, so.
And I asked you about, you know, what if you'd been killed over there. Were there some times or you look back now and you say, you know, that was pretty close? That could have been it for me?
We had some close calls, believe me. We had some close calls. Even when we had Kaji across the Rhine River, a couple of soldiers stopped off the road to relieve themselves, and I was no more than a hedge away from the guy, you know. He could have spotted me. Mm-hmm. It was dark, evidently. So that was some close calls, yeah. Not only that, a couple other times. That's where we took off a forest there. We were hiding there. Job like that, you have to have close calls. And you have to know, they taught you how to eat, OSS. They're very thorough about that. One agent was caught in a restaurant. You know, the Americans would slice their meat with this, you know, with the left hand with a knife and fork and change hands and put the fork back to the left hand and cut the meat. There were two Gestapo agents against the wall watching this restaurant. You know, they were dead Gestapo agents. So, and they saw this guy eating this and cutting the meat down and changing hands. The fork to his right hand, eating, then put the fork back to your left hand. Now, European style, you cut your meat and you eat with your left hand, see? You never change hands, see? They taught us how to eat. And they taught us how to smoke the European way, everything European way.
They taught you how to blend in, but I'm just trying to imagine being in your shoes. And there had to just be a constant fear of being discovered.
All the time, believe me. All the time. You had to look behind your back or this and that. Oh, you never know, because those Gestapo agents are those sharp we were. They knew everything, every trait, everything, every trick there was. So you had to be careful. I came out of it all right. Lucked out, I guess. Not smart, I just lucked out.
Did you ever rehearse in your mind what you would do if you got captured?
I was given a medical bag. And two cyanide tablets, in case I would capture in a bad position, all that, take a cyanide tablet, you're out. You're dead.
And you were prepared to kill yourself if it came to that.
Yeah, right. Depends on the condition at the time, you know. But after the war was over, I got him. I took him away.
I was just looking at a framed newspaper article about you and this story, and the quote it had there was you saying that the OSS saved thousands and thousands of lives. How can you make that statement? What does that mean? How do you know that?
Well, I say thousands and thousands of lives, which is true. I give credit to the agents behind the enemy line. They gave all the important information. The strength of the enemy, position the big guns were at, that's all sent in by OSS. Also, I believe that Normandy landing, OSS has something to do with the landing because of many OSS agents on French side, and they more or less gave the information when to strike. The reason they saved a lot of lives, thousands of lives, is on account of the agents' information passed on to our allies. That's my version, saved thousands of lives. Not only military, but also a lot of civilian lives.
When it comes to your time in the OSS, what would you say that you're most proud of?
I don't know. It's hard to say, Paul. There's a lot of things. Stuff I went through and what I did right. They gave me credit for that. I'm only one out of millions of military boys, and not just one of them. I don't know. I just thought I gave my share and helped. Or the savings of our country and people.
And when you're in one of those situations like you described along the banks of the Rhine, hiding out in the bushes, hoping that those Germans who were, you know, a stone's throw away don't discover you, what goes through your mind? I mean, I imagine that probably feels like forever until you move on from there, but are you sitting there just closing your eyes and bracing for that moment they find you? Are you saying a prayer that they don't? What are you doing in situations like that?
It's hard to say, Paul. Thinking a lot. I thought about this, thought about that. And in the meantime, I kept looking behind my back. But it was scary. I was really scared many, many times. They're all scared, no matter who you are. They're all scared. You live from day to day. There's always something new every day. And I felt sorry for all these kids that got killed. Thank God I pulled through it and I came out of my right senses.
You mentioned all the kids who got killed. Over 400,000 Americans died in World War II. Were any of those people that you knew?
Yeah, a couple of guys that were drafted with me in Monterey years ago in 1942. One was killed in the islands. A sniper got him, marched to the jungle there. And another guy hit a landmine. And I don't know, two that I know, real close friends. And I had a close friend, OSS, went through hell together to OSS in Europe. And here he comes back to state, discharging on. And he has heart attack the golf course. Imagine that. Going through the war, WW2, and come home a year later or 6 months later, after he discharged, had a heart attack in a golf course. playing golf. That's it. I still thank God for what I've done and being alive at 96 years old. So you never know how much longer I've got. I know I'm one of the few left.
How hard was it for all those years? I mean, your book is called 65 Years of Secrecy. That's a long time. How often over the course of those 65 years did you wish you could have told someone? Did you want to be able to talk about what you did?
I would die to tell some, especially close friends, my buddies of mine, golf, playing golf and all that here in Monterey, fishermen, where I was a contractor, a penny contractor, an employer, and never told my men anything. I just as an employer, you know. I was just dying to tell, but I held up, thank God, and nobody knew until 2008. Then it went public by the National Archives, and that's it.
Yeah, so the National Archives releases this, all the names of people who worked with the OSS. Some of those are famous names, movie stars, famous chefs, politicians, Supreme Court justices, and Johnny Cardinale. He's right there on the list. So was that a relief for you when that happened?
It was a relief. Boy, sure. It's just like letting out gas. That was quite a relief. Anyway, it's quite a relief. And I was proud of myself for what I did, and a lot of people wouldn't believe it. Like I say, there's only a few left. You probably count them with your fingers on your hand. That's how many's left. Don't know what else to say.
Well, I know what I haven't said yet. I haven't said thank you. Thank you for serving our country and for telling us this story that you had to keep to yourself for so many, many years. What do you think people today need to know about the OSS and what all of you guys were risking your lives to do?
That the OSS did quite a bit for this world, for this war, and it hasn't been publicized too much, which it should. Just as popular FBI today or the CIA today, but OSS started it all, and they should give OSS credit for all they've done. And OSS put a lot of stuff on the market for public, which they're using today. And I remember now when war was going on, the OSS scientists made a hand grenade. The hand grenades we had then, like they say pineapple and all, looked like a pineapple, pull a pin on them, but made a like a baseball, like a hardball baseball the players would use. For the kids today, they can throw a ball perfect, wherever they want. The hand grenade, they had to lob it. And you get a baseball kid today, he can hit that stop sign with the ball. That's accurate. So I don't think it was used much. I don't know if it was used at all, but they made out of handball. There's a lot of things, like the pipe, gun, and pen, speaker, and all that. They made a lot of that stuff. It all came out of OSS laboratory.
All the gadgets like we see in a James Bond movie.
That's it. A lot of gadgets made by the OSS. That's why they should give OSS lots of credit.
And if you'd like to see a photo of that baseball-shaped Beano grenade and other gadgets developed by the OSS, I have a link for you at hometownheroesradio.com. That link for his book, 65 Years of Secrecy, is there too. And also the 30-minute documentary about his story put together by his nephew, Joe Cardinale, and wife Marilyn for Gavilan College in Gilroy. There is at least one more adventure waiting for this nonagenarian who kept those secrets for so many years. He's already gotten to take a sentimental journey to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight Bay Area and visit the National World War II Memorial and other sites, but he's hoping to go back to our nation's capital in the fall when Congress will mark the 75th anniversary of the founding of the OSS by presenting the Congressional Gold Medal to Mr. Cardinale and other surviving veterans who carried out that secret and dangerous duty. So keep your eye out for his signature smile when the news coverage of that big honor rolls around, and join us again next time on Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.